Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Celebration officially starts with grand entrance tonight. More than 30 dance groups, made up of hundreds of dancers, will make their way into Centennial Hall over the course of the evening, starting at 5 p.m. The every other year gathering celebrates the survival and persistence of Thlinkit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. The Alaska Heritage Institute started the event more than four decades ago. Tomorrow through Saturday, dance groups will perform at Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, Centennial Hall, and the SHI Arts Campus. The Artist Market opens at the Arts Campus tomorrow at 10 a.m. Lectures, workshops, and more will take place the rest of the week. Saturday starts with a parade through downtown in the morning and ends with a grand exit dance in the evening. Celebration events will broadcast live on KTOO TV and stream on SHI's YouTube channel and ktoo.org/TV. More information and the full schedule of official celebration events can be found on Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's website. And a disclosure, KTOO's production department is contracted to provide television and streaming services during Celebration 2026. It operates independently from the news department. And old-growth trees, which are used to make traditional dugout canoes in Southeast Alaska, are scarce due to industrial logging. So carvers have developed a new method to build traditional boats. The first canoe made with this method completed its maiden voyage this week, landing back in Juneau for celebration. Tuesday afternoon, canoes or yak arrive and paddlers ask permission to come ashore. 10 yak are landing on the beach at Auk Recreation Area, the site of a former Thlinkit village. One is different from the others, though it looks exactly the same. Kayak Brandon Gomez from Deshu introduces the yak at the landing on Tuesday.
This is the Wave Dancer. It's a 31 foot and a half dugout canoe made out of strips. And so it's made to the same specs as a dugout canoe so that this art form, this way of our life will not be forgotten. And that so our grandchildren and their grandchildren's can participate on journeys and they too can learn to be boat builders and to wear their culture with so much pride.
The Wave Dancer is the first of its kind. It was made from smaller pieces of wood, or strips, instead of one tall pine tree, but to the same specifications as a traditional dugout canoe.
It's backwards from making a dugout.
That's Gudok J. Reed. He helped build and sail the Wave Dancer. He says they finished it just about a month before they set sail.
A dugout starts as a log and it's all removing the wood. And a strip canoe is the complete opposite. You start with nothing and you build up. It's a pretty neat process.
Carvers made the yak in Juneau and then brought it to Haines to sail in for celebration. Reed says the journey was remarkable and the yak held up.
It was beautiful. I feel some of my fellow boat builders say every canoe is an experiment. And this one was my biggest experiment yet, and it handled just fine. We know what we want to do different, and we know what we want to keep, and I'm excited to make a bunch more.
The strip canoe allows carvers to move away from using old-growth trees to keep traditional boat building alive. It's the brainchild of master carver Wayne Price. He came up with the idea more than a decade ago while he was helping build Shukahit, the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's clan house.
I was edging away, and I didn't have nothing to do, so I dreamed up a strip canoe, and I worked really hard and got it lofted, made one that was half inch thick, and every time we come up on a wave, they get blown sideways in a headwind, so I said, it's too light, so I said, we should try to make one that is same dimensions as a dugout, inch and a half on the bottom, an inch on the sides.
He says this invention was born of necessity, with old growth trees becoming harder and harder to harvest.
That's the future. When we can't get the stand halls anymore to make a dugout, we can build one out of strips. And it still has the same expectation as the dugout. So that's pretty cool.
The yak's journey for celebration was its first ever, Price says.
You know, we were going into this and we didn't know nothing. We didn't know, because it was the first one ever built. But we got it and put it in the water, and we did the sea trials coming down. We all had our sails up in 5-foot seas. We were clocked at 7 knots, and there's no water came in the boat. The strip canoe performed exactly like a dugout.
And now that it has arrived back in Juneau, it's time for these carvers and paddlers to head to downtown for celebration. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. And some cruise companies in Southeast Alaska say customers are concerned about the Hantavirus. an outbreak on a cruise ship from Argentina this spring sickened multiple passengers and eventually killed three people. But as KHNS's Melinda Munson reports, state health officials are more worried about other illnesses.
Nate Valier sells Alaska cruises for his Juneau-based company. He says there have been concerns and a lot of questions from his customers since the hantavirus cluster, which originated more than 8,000 miles from Southeast Alaska.
About half of the people who haven't quite booked yet, you know, that is a question I have is, you know, how does this ship rate in terms of cleanliness? Are there a lot of touch points? Have they had any issues?
Valier says he's confident in the safety of U.S. cruising.
For us in America, I think we're good because we do have those cleaning practices in place where, like when a princess ship unloads all these fruits and vegetables, those get washed thoroughly and inspected. Same thing with the cans of soda. You know, the cans of soda have to be washed and wiped down.
To get another perspective on the hantavirus and its potential effects on cruising, KHNS spoke to a different kind of professional.
My name is Dr. Joe McLaughlin. I'm the chief of the Alaska Section of Epidemiology and the state epidemiologist.
And how am I pronouncing the name of this virus?
You can pronounce it Hanta or Hanta. You hear a lot of people call it hantavirus. That's how I learned it in medical school, hantavirus. So I think it's sort of a tomatoes, tomatoes. You can say it either way and people will understand what you're talking about.
Hantavirus is not new. It was first identified in the 1970s, but had been observed in the 1950s in soldiers during the Korean War. It was named after the Hantan River in South Korea. The virus family is large.
Hantaviruses comprise probably at least 50 different strains of different viruses that circulate in mice and rats and voles, you know, different rodents. And they are found globally, a bunch of different strains.
To date, the hantavirus that circulated on the MV Hondius infected 11 people and caused 3 deaths. It's a strain known as the Andes strain.
This is the only strain of hantaviruses that actually, to our knowledge, is capable of human-to-human transmission, but it's quite limited in its ability to do that effectively. So it requires close and prolonged exposure to somebody who's sick. So it's not spread through casual contact like you would see with influenza or the common cold or COVID.
Hantavirus causes flu-like symptoms, which can lead to lung and heart problems. There is no cure, only treatment for the symptoms. But McLaughlin says there is no need to panic.
So it's a small outbreak, it's well contained, and the risk to the public remains very, very low.
But McLaughlin says there are other diseases cruisers and port towns should focus on.
The viruses that most commonly cause outbreaks on board cruise ships are norovirus, influenza virus, COVID, and common cold viruses. Those are the ones that are circulating pretty frequently on board cruise ships.
And McLaughlin says one disease in particular is popping up more frequently, the measles. It's making a comeback due to lower vaccination rates.
Now, the measles virus is the most contagious virus on the planet, as far as we know. And that also is spread through the airborne route. And so if somebody has measles and coughs in a room, basically, anybody else who comes into that room over the course of the next 30 minutes to an hour who's susceptible to measles could get the virus.
So, does an epidemiologist ever set foot on a cruise ship? McLaughlin says he did for his mother's 80th birthday. And while he was very careful, he reported having a lot of fun and luckily not getting sick.
I washed my hands a lot. I also tried to stay outside as much as I could and eat outside, just minimize my time in really congested places.
Skagway business owner Jonathan Hillis says despite all the media coverage, he's not worried about hantavirus or even any of the more typical diseases that affect cruise ships. He's more concerned about the high cost of shipping and particularly the decreasing value of the dollar.
Maybe a family of four or whatever books a cruise, but they're coming here with a limited budget. So they're not going to go out and eat the Crab Lakes. They're not going to go out and shop for something expensive. Maybe they'll just get the $10 t-shirt instead. They won't go on the tours that they would have before. That's the reality of increasing prices that are leaving behind the general consumer.
Skagway welcomed over 1.3 million cruise ship passengers last year. They expect to see even more this season. In Skagway, I'm Melinda Munson.
Dozens and dozens of candidates officially kicked off their campaigns for governor, Congress, and the state legislature on Monday. A spokesperson for the Division of Elections says nearly 70 filings came in on Monday alone, which was the last day to register a campaign ahead of the August primary. Election officials were still sifting through them yesterday. In the days before the deadline, many incumbent state legislators did not have opponents. But now, after the surge of late entries, just six are unopposed. All six are either Democrats or coalition-aligned Republicans. Alaska Democratic Party Executive Director Jenny Marie Stryker says that that's the result of a long-running effort to make as many races as possible competitive, even in districts that President Donald Trump won by 30 or 40 points.
It's important to contest races where a Democrat is a long shot because we have to demonstrate that inadequate leadership is not acceptable, that rolling over for Governor Dunleavy is not acceptable.
The most crowded fields are at the top of the ticket. 15 candidates are running for U.S. House, 16 for U.S. Senate, and 17 for governor. Brett Huber is a former aide to Governor Mike Dunleavy, who most recently ran the Alaska office of the conservative group Americans for Prosperity. And despite the crowded field of gubernatorial candidates, he says he's not excited about any of them. Huber says they're not telling Alaskans the truth about the problems the state faces.
Let's talk about the truth. State's out of money. We had a war, saved us. We have a $1.5 billion structural deficit in our budget. Who are we going to be when we grow up?
Huber says that he'd like to see candidates spend more time talking about the most difficult issues the state faces, from education to public safety to the permanent fund dividend. Whether the candidates speak out more on those issues is yet to be seen, but they have plenty of time to do so. The primary election isn't until August 18th. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 72 degrees. We are supposed to see some rain tonight and tomorrow, with a high of 54 degrees, and that might taper off a little bit by Sunday. You're listening to KTOO. For more local, regional, and statewide news, visit ktoo.org. Thank you for tuning in.